If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
If you're focused, if we're focusing just on finding success in sync and figuring out a way to, you know, tap into this as a potential revenue stream, there are some very practical things that you can do to set yourself up for success, even before you get into the area of trying to meet the right music supervisor or pitch your music or find that right placement.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music. You can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. All right. I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, Grayson Sanders. So Grayson is the founder of Chordal, which is reshaping music licensing with Instant Clear. His tech's been being used by top players like Primary Wave Network and Mad Decent, and he helps make complex music rights simple, especially for AI sync and the creator economy. So I'm excited to connect with him today to talk a little bit about the future of music rights and how AI, gaming, social platforms are starting to reshape the music licensing industry. And so what you as an independent artist need to know in order to be able to capture, you know, catch the wave of what's coming next. So Grayson, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for inviting me. Happy to talk to you.
Absolutely. Heck yeah. So to kick things off, would love to hear a little bit more about you and your story and how you started the company.
Yeah, of course. So I actually started my career as a composer, producer myself. I, up until my early 20s, was pretty much dead set on being a experimental composer. I was also touring in a band at the time, bartending and producing, composing on the side for income. I was just very fortunate at the time, around age 22-23, to be connected with some folks that were working on a publishing venture and doing a lot of work in the sync space out here in LA. At the time I was living in New York City, and they invited me to produce a few tracks, start trying to compose for visual media, not something that I had done a ton of. I was doing some film scoring, but it was mostly documentary work. And again, like pretty on the experimental side. So I wasn't as familiar with this whole notion of sync licensing, and especially wasn't familiar with the type of income that it could bring to an artist or a working composer. So I got very fortunate pretty early on to have a large place sync placement, and was kind of blown away by the amount of money that could show up in one check, especially compared to what you might see off of digital at that time, digital stores. It was very early streaming era. So
if you don't mind sharing, how much was that first check that you got?
It was like $25,000. Yeah. And that was, you know, 15 years ago. So
cool.
That was a sizable check to show up in a, you know, a working musician's pocket, right?
Yeah, I would not be mad. If I receive a $25,000 check, that's a good day.
Yeah, that's a good day. So, you know, at that point I leaned in, right? Like, what is this all about? How can I make this happen more often? And so it sort of started my foray into rights and licensing. Of course, first as a composer, I wanted to figure out how to crack the code and do more of that. That led to me actually starting an agency a few years later with a co-founder. We started focusing more on the trailer and film space, then ended up started representing other artists, then started representing other labels. And we pretty much grew that agency over about 10 years. The company's still around, actually. It's called Safari Riot. It's based here in LA. And that was my, my trial by fire into the business side of licensing, really learning the ins and outs of the maybe less sexy parts of the business, but very important ones, which are, you know, the underlying legal infrastructure that powers this whole industry. And of course, music rights are a really important part of that. It's who owns the rights to the intellectual property that you're trying to license, and the process of, course, trying to exploit that music, pitch it, get it placed is important. But the other part is also important. It's the part of finishing the license, negotiating the clearance, doing the contracts. All of that is, is complex and requires a pretty deep level of understanding around the underlying infrastructure and music. So that logically led into, well, how can we potentially figure out ways to simplify, and if not simplify, reduce the frictions that are preventing the music industry from really achieving its potential in this space, in terms of the amount that it can be licensing, the volume that it could be licensing. As you probably know, content has exploded, of course, over the last two decades. Traditional media like TV and film, of course, have been produced at a scale that's never been seen before. But we also have new media. We have gaming. We have all sorts of different outlets for people to experience music. And all of those environments carry with it a legal component of, well, how do we license the rights to actually have music in these spaces? And so what we were seeing is, as operating the agency at a small scale with a small roster, was that if we really wanted to serve all of those places where music could be licensed, we would need to scale up our efforts considerably. And we assumed that if we were experiencing that, everyone probably is experiencing that in the space. And sure enough, we discover that there's this whole industry around serving a lot of those platforms and end users, royalty-free music or production music, for the purpose of kind of simplifying getting music into those spaces instead of going to get the band maybe that you want to license or that famous track that you might want to license. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be awesome if we could try to figure out a way to get the music people want to license to be more user-friendly? And so that's what Chordal has been trying to achieve for the last 6 years, is building the technology that can enable that.
Cool. it definitely feels like I'm not a licensing or sync expert at all. And I get the opportunity to talk with a lot of people who are a lot smarter than I am in this world, who understand it. And every time I talk with them, I'm always struck by, like, wow, like the kind of the traditional way that this is set up is pretty complicated. There's like a lot of different moving parts. And so it sounds like what you're saying is that, coming from that world, you recognize that there is this need for a greater, a more streamlined way to, compensate the people who should be compensated for, for their music. And so that's part of what inspired you to create Chordal. Would love to hear a little bit more about the platform that you've built, and, what do you feel like is sort of the unique sauce or the thing that kind of separates it from the way that people might look for like alternatives?
Sure. Yeah. So I think maybe a good place to start is just a quick 101 on licensing and the underlying music rights that are very important to driving this part of the music business, right? So if you're familiar with music copyrights, you'll know that you've got a recording. That's the actual recording of that song that's particularly usually owned or represented by a record label, or maybe the artist if they haven't signed a record label deal. On the other side, you have the composition. That's the song that's been written, the lyrics, the melodies. And so you could have many different recordings of the same song, right? You could have covers done or alternate versions. And so the unique part about sync licensing is that when you want to get a license to use a song in a video, that could be a big film or a big TV show. That could also be a tiny video that you post on social media. You actually need to get approval from both the recording, the party that owns the recording, and the party that owns the song. So that's not always the same. Now, if you're a musician at home and you write a song on your guitar and then you record it, well, you own your song, you just wrote it, and you own your recording, you just made that recording. But as you grow as an artist, you might sign a record deal or a publishing deal, and now you've got other parties in the mix that are involved in your business, in your small business, right? Now imagine that you're a band and you've got four members. All four members are signing different publishing deals for their own songwriting credits or shares. Very quickly, you enter this space where any given song might have 5, 6, 7 stakeholders that are involved in that song. And all of those parties actually need to be involved in the conversation with someone who's trying to license a song, right? And so you can imagine, if you think about how many pieces of content are produced on a daily basis around the world, you can think about how many of these conversations and negotiations are taking place. And on the other hand, you also might imagine that for a certain type of volume or a certain type of content, it doesn't really make sense even to go try to talk to 5 people and do 5 different negotiations and contracts. It just becomes impossible. I mean, you're not ever going to get through the day, much less be able to, you know, operate your product or service if you have to do that every single time. That is why so many other parts of the industry have kind of come in to sort of fill that need. And that's what I was referencing before, the royalty-free space, now AI music, you have Suno and Udio coming into the equation. That's fraught with a lot of licensing issues of its own for different reasons. But what Chordal is trying to do at the foundation is, number one, bring as many of those people that represent the shares of those songs under one roof. So that means a lot of record labels, a lot of publishers, a lot of managers, folks that are currently in the business of negotiating syncs on their artists' or clients' behalf, get them all under one roof, number one. Number two, provide them a kind of this spiderweb connectivity of being able to see all of the other parties that they're actually connected to by the songs that they share. So for example, I've got an album, right? And I didn't know, because I recorded the album, I didn't know that there might be 5 or 6 other publishers out there that are related to my album because one of the songwriters I collaborated with goes out and signs a publishing deal. And so that's actually a big problem in the music industry right now, is that you don't even really know all of the different parties that even own pieces of the stuff that you've created because of how fractionalized and sort of dispersed it is, right? And so we're showing you this, we're pulling those pieces together and showing you, wow, okay, so this song, here's my 2 other parties that I share the song with. And we are now in this space together where we can communicate. And we can collaborate on figuring out our strategies around licensing this song. So those were steps 1 and 2. That took almost 6 years to build because it is very complex. The rights management, what we call it, the collaborative rights management infrastructure is really complex, right? There are a lot of moving parts to that. But the exciting thing is that now, since that is complete, we've just now enabled transactions to occur. So actual licensing to occur on top of all of that data. So now buyers can come to the platform and they can license from all of those parties in a single place. And the reason why that's really disruptive is because we're the first platform ever to enable this, first of all, because any other platform that is offering like a licensing solution typically sort of operates like a sync rep. What they do is they say, hey, catalog A, catalog B, catalog C, you give me all your music. I'm going to put it into this marketplace and I'm going to go out and try to get buyers to license it. And if they do, I'm going to do all the legwork in the background of helping them get the rights together. And then I'm going to take a cut and I'm going to send you the money. In Qortal, we are invisible as a platform. The rights holders themselves are directly in touch with the buyer, and they're the ones who are transacting. So it's really more of a true marketplace in that sense. And it can facilitate managing this really complicated process. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. That's really cool. So it sounds like in the past, it always required a middleman to facilitate these relationships, but it was really like, you know, they were syncing up these two different parties and there's a middleman in between. Whereas with Qortal, you're basically syncing to the background in the sense that you're just connecting people directly with each other and those rights are all synced up through the database.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So it sounds like you've been building this for the past 6 years, and I can imagine that you know, is a very complex landscape to get the foundation for. But now that you have it, here's like how recent has it been launched, and is available today? Like, people are using it. Like, what does the platform look like today? Would love to hear where it's at.
Yeah, so we have been commercially in the market for about a year and a half. Up until very recently, though, Qortal was just a place where, as a buyer, I could come, I could discover music, I could find the people that were associated with that music in a really dynamic way. I could communicate with them, and if I wanted to license something, I would, I could basically go off platform and license it in a more of a traditional way. So it was more like a research tool, a resource. Had a great creative discovery experience that kind of feels like Spotify. But the new aspect that I was just explaining is that as of March of this year, now there's the ability to actually finish the deal through the system, and the rights holders can get paid as well. And so, yes, many companies, in fact, hundreds of companies are using Qortal already. We're somewhere around 600 companies right now. It is a business to business platform currently. So it's not open for direct sign up by artists and songwriters, but it is in the roadmap for next year to extend the type of account for songwriters and artists as well to participate in this ecosystem. It was very important for us in the early days to be controlled in how we roll this out, because there's a lot of sensitivity, as you can imagine, around this process legally.
Someone doesn't actually have the rights.
And yes, missing. Exactly. Yeah. ID verification, a lot of things that really have to be in place before expansion.
Mm. Cool. Oh, man, that's really exciting. So it's very new, kind of adding that element that, and you said this is like the first platform on the market that has actually enabled that directly.
Yeah.
Cool. So I would love to hear where your mind's at as it relates to, I think you alluded to some of these like new breakthroughs that are happening with like music generation and the new tools that are available in terms of like AI and Udio and Suno. And one of my first thoughts as it relates to like that type of technology is like, I wonder how this affects the music licensing or like the sync world. And it seems like it's like a really hairy issue to kind of like to work out. So I'm curious where your thoughts are kind of add on it. And where do you think that it's headed in terms of like the future of this industry?
Sure. I mean, I think to some degree, everyone is navigating this in real time. The legal, well, case law tends to run on a delay behind innovation. So it tends to be a little bit responsive or reactive to where the markets lead. I think that from a philosophical standpoint, which I don't really care to comment on that much, because everyone falls in a different place on that spectrum. That's one conversation that's happening, right? What does it mean for artists? What does it mean for composers who are making a living in this space? Is it a threat? Is it an enabler? Does it promote creativity? I think maybe the answer to all those things is yes at the same time. Where we're focused is what it means for music rights, because, you know, up until very recently, it was pretty cut and dry. Once you got to the core of who owns something, which did take some digging to find, but once you get to the core of who owns this recording and who owns this publishing, or who at least has the right to license it on the owner's behalf, then you could, you know, you could feel secure in the license that you were getting. The new, I guess, flavor in the recipe that has been introduced through generative AI music is that that pathway is no longer cut and dry. And you've got a whole spectrum of how generative AI might be used in a piece of music. So, for example, let's say that I am using a production tool that has a generative AI component in it to create samples or to create loops or I don't even know, to create drones. And I'm using that within the context of other instruments and things that I'm adding to my overall production. And then I export that as a standalone. There's a fairly strong argument to be made that that is a substantially different piece of work that is falls under derivative works law. Like, there's a lot of, I think, arguments to support that. Some people might debate that, but I personally feel like that is fair use.
And real quick, when you say derivative works law, I'm familiar with like fair use, and I think I get from context what you're saying, but could you describe like what is sort of like the legal use of music like that, and at what point is it a gray area, or like is there a definitive sort of like this is when you're not allowed to use a piece of work like that?
There's a definition that people use to define something that would be perceived as substantially similar. Okay. And a lot of that is, you know, you look at some of these lawsuits that have happened over the last 10 years with famous songs and then other songs that came out that kind of were similar. Some people thought,
same chord progression. But...
yeah. And then you get musicologists involved and they're analyzing the actual melodic structure and the rhythm and the tempo and everything.
Musicologist.
Yeah.
Like for someone like who like works in the music industry, I'm surprised that like I'm not really familiar with that word, but I love the word musicologist.
Yeah, so musicologist is somebody who is an expert in they both understand music theory and you know, traditional music notation, but they're also familiar with music law, and they understand they essentially get hired to advise on a lot of these cases where it's like, cool. If you look at the actual melodic structure and you look at the cadence, you know, is this a direct copy? Is it substantially similar to the original? How infringing is this, so to speak? at a certain point, it's so subjective, but they try to apply a scientific method to it, right?
Put like 100 random people in the room across the world and decide, like, do they think it sounds, although even that could be like, because some of those chord progressions, they can sound similar, but like, it's an interesting, where you draw the line.
Right. So, derivative works, come from, you know, essentially are derived, it's in the word, they're derived from an original. So there's a tie back there. If you're doing a remix, that's kind of a derivative master recording from the original. It's incorporating aspects of the original and you're creating a derivative of it. In AI, generative AI music, it gets a lot hairier because you most of the time don't hear any audible tie back to the training data that is underlying that contributed to that output. Unless you put into, you know, name that generative music AI, like give me something that sounds like Miles Davis and something comes out sounding like a Kind of Blue recording. And you're like, wow, this is clearly trained on this album. But that's not how most people are using those tools. They're trying to be creative and generating new ideas, that are actually under the surface really based on old ideas. And so that brings with it, you know, like I said, I don't want to comment on the philosophical side too much, but from a licensing standpoint, it gets really tough. And so at least right now, most of the, let's say like larger corporations, large brands, multinationals that are actually big music licensees. They are paying a lot of money every year for music licensing across all of their medias. They have pretty strict no AI policies at this point. They will require their music vendors to carry errors and omissions insurance and all sorts of things. And they've been requiring that for years, but this is just to prevent them from getting into any, you know, inadvertent copyright infringement issues. But now with generative AI, it's a minefield for them. So they're pretty strict about not using it, or if they are using it, it's got to be fairly trained. And there's a whole diligence process behind evaluating those products and making sure those models were fairly trained. So from a music licensing and sync standpoint, I would say that right now people are very scared of integrating something that may have been generative AI originated into a final license. I don't know how that's going to evolve, though. Things are changing so fast on so many fronts. Very recently, just in the last couple weeks, there's been news that the majors are now negotiating with Suno. And so we thought, no one was sure if that was going to happen. We thought this massive lawsuit might have resulted in, potential success for the music industry, but it looks like they might be trying to come to the table. And so the results of those cases could really determine a lot for how we move forward as an industry with what's allowed and what's not. But there's a lot there to unpack for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that, like, for most of the established sync and licensing world, there's like people are afraid or hesitant to actually use generative music because of the state of murkiness right now. And the last thing you want is for you to invest all this money into, like, you're creating, you know, this video game or TV show or movie, and then realize that like a key piece of music that you created for it is like you're not actually able to use it. It's illegal. And so you can either get sued or have to somehow like, you know, scrape it and like replace it. It'll just be a big mess. And so because of that, people aren't really fully embracing the technology yet. But right now, and this was like a matter of within a few weeks of like us having this conversation, there is, you know, talk of like the conversation between the majors and Suno. So like maybe they could come to some kind of agreement. I wonder what that would look like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, historically, I think the majors have, if they can't beat them, they join them. And you've seen that happen in terms of model adoption. We saw that in the early streaming era as well. And so maybe there's a general acceptance, and maybe we're all feeling this across different medias, not just music, that AI is here to stay. It's bringing with it a lot of wonderful innovation, a lot of things that we couldn't do 2 years ago that are, you know, unfathomable, that were unfathomable, and now we're doing it daily. That's awesome. And there's also a component of a direct and very real, clear, and present danger as it affects revenue streams for folks, displacement of jobs. And so we're kind of experiencing all of this all at once. Mm-hmm. And from the sync standpoint, people are taking, at least the established sync space, they're taking a little bit more of a cautionary approach at this point. But
yeah,
if you're talking about like DIY producers and musicians, or even content creators, you know, it's AI is everywhere on YouTube video, the backgrounds of YouTube videos. I mean, it's already disseminated beyond the point of control. So it's more like how, in my view, it's a really the focus should be at this point on remuneration. So making sure that the data sets that are underneath these models have a method in place to attribute to the right rights owners and compensate them, even in a tiny fractional way, for the usage of their intellectual property.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, it certainly feels like there should be like some kind of attempt or some kind of ability to compensate, you know, the people who are supplying the data that's training these models, which are then being like commercialized. Also, the logistics of it seem like a interesting challenge to face. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a lot of very smart people who are literally like, you know, working to the bone to like figure this part out right now.
There are a couple companies I know of that have made some serious progress on that. They've done some really interesting things around tracking the weights of data that had trained certain, tracking the weights in outputs from the data sets. So for example, you get an output from a particular model based on a prompt. And then underneath in the data, you can look at the top 100 weights that resulted in that output. And those weights are, you know, let's for the sake of the conversation, say from 0 to 100, you have the top 20 of those weights around, you know, the 85th percentile up to 100, and then it slowly tapers off. But with that type of thinking, you can look at those weights and say, okay, well, how can we assign some type of royalty rate to the owners of the copyrights that were the most influential on the output? I think that's the way we should be thinking.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, I think I saw an interview with some of the founders of Anthropic, AI, and they had sort of like an internal joke where they recognized that there was like a specific weight in their model that was assigned to like a, I don't know, like a beach city or something. And so they like had a model that they amped up that weight a bunch, and like all of the outputs were like sort of normal, but then they would somehow find a way to like reference that city. And if I remember correctly, it was kind of the point that you're making right now around like the weights, where it is a science or it's an art of kind of like figuring out how to attribute those weights, because it's not always clear when these, like when the brain comes together. And maybe it's kind of like our own neurons, like sometimes they get wired together and there's interesting relationships that happen, but you can start to see like a correlation between certain topics or ideas that get triggered together. And so these companies are basically doing analysis of those weights in a way that allows them to attribute if a certain artist comes up. And if you directly say, I want a song that sounds like the Beatles, and you say that over and over again, you notice, oh, there's this weight, or there's this piece of the, you know, the AI model that keeps getting triggered whenever we say that, then you can start to map that and say, you know, this might like relate to the Beatles, or it relates to a genre that is also heavily influenced by the Beatles and this music scene around it. Oh man, that's so fascinating.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too.
Cool. So, would love to hear just a little bit as we get ready to wrap up this conversation. What are you personally most excited about that you're working on right now? Where do you think that things are like headed for? Let's say like the the majority of people who are watching or listening to this right now are like independent musicians or maybe like independent collectives of artists who are looking at, you know, how can we best swim along with the waves of technology that are like kind of crashing right now. How would you recommend that they approach these new kinds of technologies, and how can they best utilize the Chordal platform that you're building? I know that you mentioned you have in the roadmap some different things that are coming out, but would love to hear you talk a little bit about next steps for people who are watching this right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if we're focusing just on finding success in sync and figuring out a way to, you know, tap into this as a potential revenue stream, there are some very practical things that you can do to set yourself up for success, even before you get into the area of trying to meet the right music supervisor or pitch your music or find that right placement. And so some of that actually relates to what we're talking about today. And that's number one, understand, like really, really try to understand how music rights work. That's something that I wish I was taught even when I was younger than when I figured it out, right? It's understand the way your intellectual property works, because that is the core to so many aspects of how you can monetize in the music industry, not just sync. But in sync, it's especially important to have a very clear picture over your recording rights and your publishing rights. And on the recording side specifically, are you using samples? If you have used samples, where do those samples come from? Do they come from a beat marketplace? If they came from a beat marketplace, make sure you really understand the terms and conditions of that beat marketplace, what it means, like BeatStars, for example. Have you used generative AI to create samples in your music? If the answer is yes to either of those questions, that's something that is certainly going to come up in the licensing process if you're trying to get a sync license. So I would say a really good best practices is number one, try to keep your rights as clean as they can be. Because if you're going to be getting an opportunity from a music supervisor to potentially license your song into something, you want to provide them the easiest pathway to do that with as little stress and concern as possible, because just know that they're probably looking at other options at the same time. And it's not just based on what's the creatively most exciting thing when they're making that ultimate decision. It's based on a lot of things. The complexity, for example, of licensing something equates directly to time spent and effort spent on their part. And so if you can make that pathway very clean, have all that data ready, you're setting yourself up for success for sure. Now, something that is really exciting to me is that up until fairly recently, sync has been something that is pretty tough to access. It is a pretty closed industry, and that's not for the sake of being exclusionary. I think you've got a lot of huge music fans who are making these decisions for music. Music supervisors are huge music fans. They love the idea of finding a great independent artist, finding a cool label in this corner of the world that they never heard of. I think it just comes down to like time and just the pure just breakneck pace that these productions operate at that ends up making it such that those licensees, those buyers default to their usual relationships and their sources of music curation. So what I think is exciting now is that there are way more outlets and opportunities for music to find a home in visuals and be licensed. And as that connects to Chordal, of course, in the future, there's going to be an ability for artists to be more involved directly. But we have just, we're about to announce that we've taken our licensing technology that we launched in March, and we're putting it into an API. So what that means is that that API can now be used by other platforms around the world to extend music licensing functions to their user base. And so that means that, you know, your music could eventually be in all sorts of places for all sorts of licensing, even if they're small fees, but they're higher volume, right, for content creators. And so that's the future that Chordal's focused on, is like how we can use this underlying infrastructure we built to get the, you know, music produced by artists and songwriters into as many places where it could be discovered by someone who's making that content purchasing decision. And so that's what I think you should definitely look forward to from us.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I mean, as the founder of a software as a service for musicians that, you know, we just launched about 2 weeks ago.
Congrats.
Hearing that you guys have, that you guys either have like right in progress or right now, like you have an API, would love to connect more on how we can integrate directly. We have about 160,000 artists who are in our database, mostly on our email list because we only launched the software recently, but would love to integrate sync licensing, you know, opportunities for them, because we don't, I'm not an expert, you know, in that industry at all. So I tend to leave that for experts like yourself. So would love to explore that more.
Cool.
Sweet. Well, Grayson, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing a little bit about your background in sync licensing, what you're creating for the future of the industry. And for anyone here that's interested in connecting more or staying up to date on the latest updates from the platform, what's the best place for them to go to connect more?
So we have an Instagram. So definitely feel free to follow us and interact there on comments. Also LinkedIn. We're very active on LinkedIn. And then our website is the best place to learn about the newest updates coming out of the platform. So it's chordal.com.
All right. Fantastic. Cool. Well, Grayson, that's talking about chords. I'm not sure if that's coming through clearly or not.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, like, you're taking all these separate notes and you're putting them together. Beautiful. All right. Well, Grayson, thanks for being on the podcast and look forward to talking again soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Really enjoyed chatting with you. Take care.
Hey, this is Michael, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.